We will come to order. Amanda, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel.
Here.
Vice Chair Rodriguez. Ranking Member Escamani.
Here.
Representatives Daly.
Here.
Gil Lombardo.
Here.
Marcil. Gregory.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Mariano.
Here.
Nixon.
Here.
Umphrey.
Present.
Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin. Robinson.
Here.
And Sir Roy is excused. A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Amanda. Before we begin, if everyone, members and members of the audience, please turn off. Please turn off any device that may make a noise. And if you are speaking, members or members of the audience, even though we have these fancy green lights on your microphone, please make sure the yellow thing is illuminated so the 23 million people watching on the Florida channel can hear you. Members, we have three bills today, and I know some of them, there's going to be a lot of questions and some appearance cards, so we're going to do our best to get through all three. Up first, we have HB 55, Building Design, by Representative Overdorf. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm here today to present House Bill 55, also known as Building Design. This bill prohibits local governments from adopting design and aesthetic ordinances for single and two-family dwellings. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get in proper position if I could present the amendment, please.
Representative, could you just kind of explain the original bill first, and we'll see if there's any questions on the original bill. You could do a brief summary on the original bill.
Brief summary is that it prohibits local governments from adopting design and aesthetic ordinances for single and two-family dwellings.
Members, before we get to the amendment, even though it's a strike all, any questions? Seeing none, please present your strike all amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The strike all amendment, long and short of it, basically, excuse me one second. It puts it into a proper position as far as allowing for CRAs, HOAs, historic districts. Those provisions will still apply to the proposed bill, whereas before it did not, and that is the amendment.
Great, thank you. Members, are there any questions on Representative Overdorf's strike call? Well, no questions. Public testimony. Okay, we have Brewster Beavis, Associated Industries of Florida. I'm sorry, Mr. Beavis, I did not hear you. Oh, hold on. Okay. Elizabeth Abernethy, the City of St. Petersburg. You are recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you for hearing me today. I appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of you. My name is Elizabeth Abernethy. I'm the Director of Planning and Development for the City of St. Petersburg. We do have some concerns about this design preemption bill, primarily because it would limit our ability to provide for that balance between new development and existing development, where you know, our community has told us time and time again that protecting our neighborhood character, protecting what makes St. Pete special is important to them. And through these design regulations that we've had since 2007, we've been able to work with our builders and developers in our community and have that balance so that new homes and new structures that are coming in really fit in with our community. I did provide a memo. I'm not sure if it got to you. I have a lot of photos of what those new homes look like and what some of the result of the design regulations. And if you didn't get this, I'll get it to you after today. You know, one of the things that design regulations can really help us with, too, is introducing new building forms like accessory dwelling units or what people known as garage apartments or granny flats. And again, in 2007, we reintroduced to part of our city the allowance to have those with design regulations that help them to match the existing home and fit in. And we've been able to expand that a couple of times over the years so that more than half of our city, or 30,000 lots, now qualify for accessory dwelling units. And we'd like to take that a step further. But if I don't have the ability to have design regulations, those are not going to be accepted into further into new areas. We also, as part of our affordability initiatives in the last couple of years, have established a new zoning district to allow up to 4 units in a structure. And we want to be able to bring that to different areas in our city. But again, if a duplex, I don't have the ability to have design regulations, I'm not going to get community acceptance and the ability to expand that. So it's really limiting our ability to be proactive about different building types and try to strike that balance between people really that don't want change and to be able to accommodate the infill and the change that we need to continue to grow and provide opportunities for all different people to live in our city. We did have some suggestions for an amendment if this does go forward. Perhaps exempting accessory dwelling units, which would be a single unit building, so we would lose the ability to have design standards for that. So we might ask that there be an exemption for accessory dwelling units. Perhaps expanding the design exemption to allow overlay districts, which it would be our traditional districts, where we have requirements for things like front porches to, again, help those new homes to blend in with our existing neighborhoods. We're also asking that the historic district exemption include all structures, not just contributing structures, because we're concerned the way that it's written now, might actually undermine those historic districts because that design regulations would only apply to certain buildings in the historic district, not all buildings. So that would be a concern that could lead to perhaps additional demolitions and people that would undermine those districts. Our city was developed mostly in the 1920s. There were no zoning regulations, there were no HOAs or covenants and restrictions. So we need these design regulations to help balance change in our city. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody might have. Thank you.
Members, any question? Ranking Member Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just have one very quick question. Elizabeth, you virtually spoke to us, correct? Just wanted to confirm that.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I talked to you about building permitting a couple of weeks ago virtually, so nice to be in here in person today to talk about our zoning and planning regulations as well for our city. So
thank you for making the trip up.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. You. Up next, also from the city of St. Pete, Ann Vikstrom, the urban planner.
Thank you for...
Hi, welcome. You're recognized. And try not to be redundant, since you're both from St. Pete, if you can come up with some new ideas. Thank you.
I was just going to wave in opposition, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for making the trip. Members, we are in debate on the amendment. Any members wishing to debate? Okay, seeing no debate. Representative Overdorf, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Close.
Without objection, show that amendment as adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. Members, do we have any questions on the bill as amended? Ranking Member Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thanks for going through the process. And I have a few questions coming from my local cities, but I'll just stick to one for now. I know there's an exemption for historic districts. Is there a concern that with that exemption, if this bill were to become law, that we would just see local governments in effort to maintain the local aesthetics start moving towards historical districts versus overlay districts? And overlay districts do offer more flexibility for construction, so would that actually be a backlash to the goals of this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I would suggest that a historic district must include historic buildings. So I can't see a historic district being expanded to cover new construction areas.
Additional? Follow? No additional questions here. Okay. We will now take public testimony. Any additional public testimony? No? Okay. Members, we are in debate. Anyone wishing to debate on the bill? Ranking Member Escalante.
Happy to add a few thoughts to debate. So my biggest concerns with this bill are just the overreach with local control on especially overlay districts. And I think if there was an intentional effort to provide an exemption to overlay districts, that would be important, because the conversations I've had with builders and with my city are very much grounded on, you know, discussions around affordable housing, ensuring that, you know, these type of overlay districts don't impede affordable housing, while also striking the balance of meeting the local aesthetic so that the property values maintain their value and that we can do inflow, as St. Petersburg highlighted as well. And so I would really like to see an exemption be made for overlay districts. I am concerned about that exemption not being made, in the sense that we are completely eliminating a local government's ability to just draw some basic standards. And I think the compromise, members, could be that if construction companies are frustrated by, you know, unclear standards, then maybe there's a requirement that local governments at least print those objectively, like what are the building requirements to build in this area? Because I do empathize if local governments are kind of making rules without, you know, being printed and clear. So I think that could be a compromise to consider. For now, I'll be down on the bill, but if I do see it again, you know, I look forward to seeing any type of changes with the feedback of local governments.
Representative Daly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Overdorf, I appreciate your time this morning to talk through this issue with me. For me, it's a hard no, only because the crux of the bill would basically eliminate everything that one of my main cities in my district stands for and has been known for years. The city of Coral Springs, and not that this is necessarily something to brag about for everybody, has some of the most stringent aesthetic standards of any city probably in Florida. Heck, at one time they were known as the only place in the Southeast United States where the Golden Arches couldn't be in front of the McDonald's, right? And it's a source of, it's something that's been ingrained in our community, and you expect when you move to Coral Springs that there are more stringent standards, there are more requirements in place for the benefit of everyone's collective property values. So I appreciate that. Maybe that was me. Okay, so I do appreciate your time today. I have to be down on the bill. I do, you know, just like Representative Escamani, hope that there is some middle ground that maybe we can reach, because my understanding is, as of today, this would take every requirement that we have, aesthetic standard that we have, and wipe it away. And I think the other point for me is, if we could narrow this in some shape or form, I also happen to work for a development company, so I understand builders.
Representative Daly, I think your pacemaker is going off. Yeah. All right. No. All right, how's it? Are we back in order? I may have to move my seat.
You were doing something fishy.
Yeah. I'd like to think that I was so effective in my debate that they had to cut me off. I don't know. But no, listen, in closing, and I'll wrap it up, I think that there is a middle ground that I hope that we can reach, because for me, in my district, this is kind of the very fabric of what we've known for years and years. And if there's a way to narrow it, look, if there's one in particular issue in particular that is driving up the cost, because it's, you know, tinting on windows that is now required or something like that, let's direct the preemption at that issue. As a home rule fan, I'm certainly not a big fan of preemptions ever, but if we've got to do them, can we narrow them in scope where we're not just coming in and wiping everything out? So with that, I appreciate your time and look forward to working with you on the bill.
Representative Gregory, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Overdorf, for this good bill. I just want to bring to the attention to the local communities that are, you know, kind of instinctively pushing back against the bill that you can't have it both ways. You can't, you know, express remorse for the lack of affordable housing in your community while simultaneously, you know, pushing regulations to the extent in a drive for pride of, for example, all the garages have to be on the side, or you all have to have tile roofs, or you all have to have paved driveways. When you overregulate in that way, so you can have pride in your community, you're actually making it impossible for people to be able to afford to live there. So I think any time that we can deregulate, it actually helps us with more affordable houses. So I appreciate the bill.
Representative Overdorf, seeing no more debate, you are recognized to call on your bill as amended.
Couple items I'd like to respond to. First of all, the City of St. Pete, I look forward to you actually reaching out to me and talking to me about the bill. This is the first time that I've heard of those issues that you had. I'd also like to reflect that as we look at this, I think an important point was brought up, and that is the lack of affordable housing and the costs that are being put on homeowners as we go, as we move forward. These are for lots and for homes that are in open lots. These are not in developments. These are not in CRA districts. These are not in historic districts, as we've talked about. When we look at Osceola County, this is a place where they say that you must, if a driveway composes more of 60% in the front yard, it should require pavers. Pavers are expensive. City of Miami requires reflective roof coverings in their zoning code, and that's also for a regular home. Miami-Dade County is now requiring infrastructure for electrical vehicle chargers. There's a variety of others in here that are continuing to drive up costs that, with all due respect, cannot then allow for affordable housing in this. This is a bill that addresses single and duplex families and residential dwellings that are not within any kind of other area, that they are within an open lot. Members, I appreciate your support, and with that, I close. Thank you.
With Representative Overdorf having closed on the bill, Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly?
No.
Escamani?
No.
Gio Lombardo?
Yes.
Golf Marcil?
No.
Gregory? Rico?
No.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano? Yes. Umphrey?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes.
Plankin? Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 55, Building Design, as amended, reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Chair.
Up next, HB 219, Vacation Rentals, by Representative Fisher. Hold on. Representative Fisher, could you please just give us a second? Representative Overdorf, could you come back? We missed the vote, so we're going to do another roll call. Amanda, please call the roll on HB 55 again.
Representatives Daly?
No.
Escamani?
No.
Gio Lombardo?
Yes.
Golf Marcil?
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Nope.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano? Nixon?
No.
Umphrey?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes.
Plankin? Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes. Members, by your vote. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 55. It must be my pacemaker. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 55 as amended, reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Representative Fisher, please present HB 219 vacation rentals.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. If you haven't gotten a proper welcome to the Florida House for those freshmen who haven't seen the bill yet, the thousands of emails that you've received on this one, you know, let that serve as a good and proper welcome. It's always been a fun bill to present in committees. And so I tried to reach out to some of you in advance. I know I wasn't able to get to everybody. So for those of you who haven't heard the bill before, I definitely want to give a good, thorough explanation of it, but I think we should all start where we agree. I think if you look around the state of Florida, we would all agree that the current way vacation rentals are handled isn't working, right? Nobody's, I think, really happy about the current state of things. I see some head nodding there. I mean, there's I think I agree with that. Some of the people who oppose the bill also agree what's happening now is not really working. And so what me and others have tried to do in the past is to come up with some kind of way where we can fix the dysfunction of the regulatory scheme across the state of Florida. Obviously, some people you know, support different ideas. The one that I've brought forward to you today, and I do have an amendment that we can get into in a little bit if you want to do that first or afterwards. But the crux of the bill, the core of the current version, is that it requires platforms to be responsible for the collection and remittance of all taxes due on vacation rentals. And it ensures that licensed vacation rentals are listed and it requires the platforms to be regulated exclusively under Chapter 509. Now, I realize that there's some preemption that happens in that, but in the current scheme of things, that's not happening today. That is a major concern that we've heard in the past. It's a change that when I took over the piece of legislation that I made sure that we put in, because I think if taxes are owed, taxes should be paid. I think that's something we can all agree on. It does maintain the local government's full authority to use measures available to abate nuisances such as party houses and things like that. This bill does not strip away the ability of a local government to try to abate nuisances such as party houses. It requires a compilation submission and the display of information in a readily accessible format in order to facilitate the enforcement of state and local governments. So right now, if you go on a rental platform, you can't always see where the location is. You can't always see the different things. It's harder for the tax collectors to figure out what things are owed. It can be difficult. Like, you don't see a lot of the information. So the bill is requiring that information be available in a very easily publicly available area. It also clarifies that vacation licensing and rentals, vacation rental licensing and inspections are regulated under Chapter 509. Again, that's a state function. It is kind of preempted up to the state level, but it's to make sure that things are consistent and that it's happening in a way that ensures safety for the public in Florida. This bill does not destroy home rule. Locals will retain the ability to regulate against bad actors, as I mentioned before, about nuisances and party houses and things like that. That local authority is still maintained in my version of the bill. This bill does not legalize vacation rentals anywhere where they are not legitimately zoned. It does not approve illegal hotels. That's a criticism that I've heard, that these are just illegal hotels. And you know, by definition, they're not listed as hotels. There are some changes in the strike all that if you would like me to discuss some of those, we can move over to that portion. But that's kind of the core of the bill as filed. And then there is an amendment that aligns some of the tax language and other things.
Members, do we have any questions on the bill as filed, or do you want to wait for the amendment? What? Okay. No, there's no questions on this portion, Bill, so why don't you present the amendment? Thank you.
All righty. So the major changes in the amendment are in alignment of the tax structure in order to make sure that things are being collected as I suggested. I worked with Ways and Means staff here in the House, and I worked with the partners over in the Senate to make sure that things are clarified and aligned so that it's clear as we make those changes to the tax code that things are collected and remitted and how that process will work. It also adds in provisions that will make it much tougher for sexual predators. That's a concern that I've heard in previous years about sexual predators possibly coming into neighborhoods. This bill will make it significantly more difficult for them to stay there. In fact, it's more difficult for them to stay there than at a hotel in the version of the legislation that I put in front of you. The other thing that I've added, made sure that I've added to the bill, is I've heard some talk about discrimination. So discrimination may have happened, things like that. There's a provision in here that requires that they have anti-discrimination policies. Those are the really big changes in the amendment. It came in as a strike all because of the nature of the tax code and the way that things are. Those are the three big changes: the tax structure, the anti-discrimination, and making it difficult for sexual predators to be able to go into neighborhoods.
Great, thank you, Representative Fisher. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Any questions? Okay. Wow, you guys are great. Testimony on the amendment. Any testimony on? No. No testimony on amendment. Appearance cards on the amendment. No. Members, we're in debate on the amendment. Oh, is that on the amendment or? I think your appearance card is on the bill. Thank you. Okay. No debate on the amendment. Representative Fisher, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close.
Okay. Without objection, show that amendment adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. Members, are there questions to Representative Fisher on the bill as amended? Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, Representative. So a number of cities, as you're well aware, have adopted ordinances since 2014. That would be wiped away if this bill was passed. By all accounts, those cities seem to be working through the issue. So why are you proposing to eliminate locally vetted solutions that are working? We like to say that the government closest to the people is sometimes the best government. So if that's working, why propose this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I've also heard people say that socialism has started to invade America through local government. So there's some kind of back and forth on that suggestion there. What I would say is that we do honor an agreement that was made. Any local ordinance that was passed on or before June 1st of 2011 will be grandfathered in. I also added some provisions in there to make sure that if they wanted to change those grandfathered regulations, that they wouldn't lose their grandfathering if they allowed for a more friendly, business-friendly environment. So they could make changes to it that would make it less restrictive, but they couldn't make changes to it that would be more restrictive and keep their grandfather clause. But I have, in my version of the bill, honored some of the local regulations.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, but just to be clear, folks who have something on the books and negotiated with their community, or not negotiated, but went through the process of passing these ordinances post-2011, did so under the auspices of what the state permitted at that time, those would all be wiped away.
Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any ordinance that's passed after June 1st of 2011 would no longer be in effect.
Okay, Mr. Chair, one final question, if I may. So switching gears, and thank you for that, Representative. So switching gears to affordable housing, if someone can make $200 a night running a short-term rental in a residential neighborhood versus, say, $1,000 or, $1,500 a month, doesn't the proliferation of investor-owned short-term rentals exacerbate the affordable housing crisis that I think we all agree exists?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think a fundamental principle in America is private property rights. And I think if people don't like what others do with their property and they want to create conditions where they think it will lead to more affordable housing. I don't always agree that some of the affordable housing solutions lead to that. Then they have, by right, the ability to go and purchase those properties and develop them in a way that they think will meet their policy objectives.
Mr. Chair, one more quick follow-up, if I may.
One more bite.
Representative, and I appreciate the argument on property rights. I'm a big property rights fan. I'm also a big property rights fan of your neighbor's property rights. So whose property rights are more important?
Recognized.
Everybody's property rights are important.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. Representative Nixon, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, Representative Fisher. Great to serve in the delegation with you in Duval County. So I have a few questions as it relates to DPBR, right? So last year, DPBR ultimately projected that 19 new full-time positions and additional appropriations in excess of $1.4 million would be needed to implement the prior version of this bill. Has DPBR provided an updated analysis on what resources and funds would be needed to implement this bill as originally filed or based on the strike all amendment?
In our discussions with DPBR, there was no, that was not a necessary amendment to push forward. As you may recall, this is your first year here, so you weren't here when we went through that, so I apologize. But that was something that was taken up in the appropriations portion of the process. In our conversations with DPBR, that's not been something that they felt is continued to be necessary, so it's not something that I've offered up as an amendment here. And I don't suspect it'll be an amendment later unless there's some engagement as it goes through appropriations.
Okay. So DPBR has a poor track record when it comes to inspecting lodging establishments and currently doesn't have an agency head. I actually had the opportunity to speak with him right before he resigned, unfortunately. If I remember correctly, they haven't hit their performance benchmark since 2014. Has the agency done anything to show that they have the ability to handle all these current responsibilities and have capacity to take on any new ones?
Representative Fisher, you are recognized.
I haven't received any objections or any additional feedback for changes from DPBR. So I think, to push into that further, if you'd love to meet with them and talk to them about it and work on some solutions there, if you feel like they're not meeting the standard that you have set, then I think those are conversations that can happen. But as I've said, from my conversations with them, that's not been the issue.
Okay. I'm having another question.
You're recognized.
Are you aware of the Gold Rush incident that took place in Jacksonville in regards to the motel?
You're recognized, sir.
Nope.
Okay. Well, there were actually about 89 units that at a hotel in my district in regards to Councilman Gaffney had to get shut down, but there were numerous complaints. And so my question, again, is if this hotel took years to be shut down as it relates to killings and just dilapidation and things like that, how are we so sure, again, that DPBR has the capacity to oversee and provide oversight with vacation rentals or with Airbnb and things like that?
You're recognized. Try to answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would say the current state of affairs is probably worse than anything that's proposed. So the status quo is actually worse towards the policy goal that you're trying to try to get after. Because I think both of us would agree that some level of accountability, some level of inspection, something should be looked at. This bill actually does that, and it does it consistently across the state of Florida. Right now, like the status quo, I would say the situations would be worse. And so, I think this is a solution moving forward that gets us closer to addressing the concerns that you're bringing up in your question.
One final question.
You're right.
Did you speak with anyone in Duval County, any local officials in Duval County in regards to this bill?
I've had many conversations over the last several years about vacation rentals.
Can I follow up with that?
Sure, one more.
In regards to this year, specifically.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Ranking Member Escamon.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thanks so much, Rip, for the great review of the bill. And obviously, it's something you're really passionate about, and you've spent a lot of time on it.
A lot of time.
I have a few questions, but I'll yield to the chair to move through them. My first is a little more technical. Just based on the bill, is it DPPR or DOR that's managing the collection of taxes? And like, what are those dynamics? And do we think both departments have the staffing to do so?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that they do have the capacity to do so. And yes, the DOR is involved in the legislation. They're not helping me craft the language, but it's important to make sure that the tax compliance piece of it is correct, and there'd be the ability through rulemaking to, you know, for both of the agencies to potentially look at it.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up to that specific question. So who's playing the oversight arm and making sure, for example, advertising platforms are paying taxes? Does DPPR play the enforcement, or is it DOR?
Yeah. DPPR is the one that we grant the authority to issue the letters or you know, to say cease and desist, we'll take you to court. DPPR has really been the one that we've enabled to do that.
One more.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks for that, Rep. Okay, just thinking about advertising platforms as a whole and the economic impact of their growth in our state. Local ordinances have tried to strike that balance between the hotels and these disruptors. So I'm curious about the impact of the bill. Do we know how much money the advertising platforms make that's out of state? And like what are the advertising platforms? Airbnb obviously is a clear one. Does Facebook also count? Like, what are the other companies that are already doing this work in Florida? And do you foresee an expansion of out of state expansion of these companies impacting the locals? Or, you know, what's the prediction on just the financial impact of money being made in Silicon Valley compared to money being made in Florida?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized to speculate on that.
Well, the companies that you've mentioned are you know, definitely involved. You know, in the technology industry, it's always hard to predict who's going to come in and make a play to try to provide solutions, as you mentioned, about disruption. I mean, I'm an electrical engineer. I work in the tech space. And so there's named people out there, but there's also investors that could get involved. And so it's really hard to speculate that. And as far as the numbers, I mean, some of the companies are publicly traded. I'm sure if you or someone on your staff spent the time to go through, I don't know what dollars they're making, or that's not been my focus. My focus is actually making it safer and more secure for Floridians, as going through the issues that I talked about, making it tough for sexual predators to get in, making sure that people are paying their taxes, making sure that, you know, people aren't discriminating against others. You know, the economic side of it, you know, look, I wish people well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Chair. Shifting gears a little bit, Reb. My colleague, I think Rep. Daly, already mentioned affordable housing, so I won't be redundant, but there is research out there that's been done around apartments on the market that are too expensive to rent. The landlords are not reducing the rent. Instead, they're able to make more money off Airbnb or off these other advertising platforms. So it takes supply off the market. Has there been any staff analysis on just the impact of this preemptive legislation on affordable housing options, or on options of almost artificially seeing these rates stay up because of the option to do a short-term rental versus a lease?
You're recognized.
I'm not aware of any studies of that nature. I mean, certainly if you want to share something that you've seen, I'm glad to, you know, glad to take a look at it, and then, you know, I'll be able to say that I've seen something in the future. I think, again, going back to part of my answer to Representative Daly's question, I think people have the right to do what they want with their property within some bounds. And if people feel like it has a negative impact or a positive impact on affordable housing, I mean, if they have the means and resources and they care about that policy enough, buy the property, develop it in the way that you think will best serve the community. In this case, some of these individuals think this is the best thing to serve their community, and that's what they move forward with because they have those property rights for their property.
Seeing no more questions, we are on public testimony. I'm sorry, Representative Garth Marcel, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you said that local governments would still be able to regulate the vacation rentals. Could you explain what you meant by that?
Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have an issue with noise or parking on the street or in the neighborhood, you can't discriminate against one of the homes. But you could apply the standard consistently. So if there's an issue with party houses, it's not just for one place, it's for everybody.
Follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's so you are saying then that long-term rentals should be regulated exactly the same as short-term rentals? Is that
recommend? What I'm saying is, if you're going to pass an ordinance that affects a neighborhood because it's good for the neighborhood, then it should apply to the neighborhood.
Okay, so it would.
You recommend.
So it would affect short-term rentals would be regulated the same as long-term.
It's consistent is the point of the language, that you can still put in regulations that affect short-term rentals, but if it affects a community, if it affects an area, it has to be applied consistently. If you read the language, that's the intended goal of it, and that's what it says.
Okay, and one more follow-up?
Sure, absolutely. You're recognized.
So are you saying then every situation would be the same for a long-term rental as a short-term rental? In your opinion?
You can't discriminate against a short-term rental because it's a short-term rental, right?
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions? Any additional questions? Seeing none, we are in the public testimony portion. Up first, we have Jack Corey from the City of Jacksonville Beach and the Village of Tuskegee. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, appreciate your time. House Bill 219, as the staff summary points out, there are approximately 26,000 licensed vacation rentals in the state of Florida right now. A recent news article by the proponents of this bill said that there are 60,000 vacation rentals that they operate. Therefore, 34,000 unlicensed, unregulated vacation rentals are in the state today, in your neighborhoods, next to your constituents. Many of them owned by out-of-state and foreign corporations, which local governments cannot find to enforce because they're a foreign corporation. Please, as the proponent said, this is a private property rights issue, and we could not agree more. Please protect private property rights. But protect the private property rights of the 5 million Florida residents who have homestead exemption. In a poll recently, 75% of those residents wanted local control, and they ask you to permit your local constituents to make local decisions. Governor DeSantis has said that, in his view, this should be determined locally. You heard from the proponent about the emails that you're receiving. You're receiving those because the proponents' out-of-state corporations are sending your emails out throughout the world. The world. And if you look at those emails, none of them have Florida residence addresses. None of them are your constituents. They may refer to the fact that they own a vacation rental in Florida, but it doesn't mean they live here. Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, when you were asked by the proponents to support this bill, it was a 9-page bill. Today, you're now being asked to support a 28-page strike-all amendment. And as Representative Nixon wisely pointed out, the next amendment you'll be asked to support will be $1.5 million of appropriations from your residents to regulate this concept. We ask you to vote no on this bill. Thank you, Mr.
For making the trip and your testimony. Up next, Representative Plankin, you have, sir, I'm sorry, we have a question for you.
I apologize.
Just very briefly, you made the comment that in the case of a foreign investors, essentially the local government can't get their hands on them. But do not they have the ability to fine and ultimately lien a property to bring some type of enforcement? Please let me know.
Chairman, thank you, Chairman. As the proponent said, we have building inspectors and police departments. With all due respect, Representative, I think the police department has better things to do at 1 o'clock in the morning than try to find a foreign investor and a foreign LLC that is not registered locally, that may not even be registered in the state of Florida. And that's what we would be dealing with this bill.
But, Mr. Chair,
yeah, follow.
Can they not just lien the property? That would tend to be an attention getter, I would think. And then they would ultimately get a fine paid for. And if you're a property order, a foreigner, you're not going to want liens on your property.
Thank you, Chairman. There's a lot of assumptions there, Representative. If you are a foreign owner with a piece of property that is bringing in tens of thousands of dollars a week, a lien may or may not have any effect on it. With all due respect, sir. That is the reason, as has been pointed out, local control is the best way. If those 5 million homesteaded property owners have any of these problems, we can find them. We can find them in the local tax collector's office. We can find them in our local offices, in the local water department. But you can't find a foreign LLC.
Thank you, sir. Representative Nixon, go ahead.
Can you tell me who you're representing again?
We have two cities. One of them is Jacksonville Beach, in the great Duval County, and one of them is the village of Tequesta in northern Palm Beach County.
So Jacksonville Beach is opposed to this bill?
Aggressively opposed. I'm sorry, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman.
Aggressively opposed for this reason, Representative Nixon. We have had vacation rentals in Jacksonville Beach for decades. We've had no problems. We spent 200 hours in Jacksonville Beach of man hours, women hours, city commission hours, vacation rental owners coming in and developing our order. 200 hours. We have not spent 200 hours in this legislature in the 3 years of this bill. But we spent 200 hours locally in Jacksonville Beach. We have it working now. We have it under control. We have it where it's restricted. We have it where we can find people, find who they are, not necessarily find them, because hopefully they don't do anything wrong. But yes, we're aggressively against it.
One final question.
One final.
So Jacksonville Beach is a part of Duval County,
right?
And I'm a part of that delegation. Were you all approached about this bill by the bill sponsor? Just wondering.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. We have not been approached this year. We have spoken to the bill sponsor, to be respectful, last year. I've been around this process a couple of years. We do not support or oppose a bill without first going to the bill sponsor. So the mayor and city commission and manager came over and visited with the bill sponsor, and I let them visit with them and discuss it and discuss their personal feelings.
Thank you. Thank you again for your testimony.
Thank you so much, Chairman. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
We're back to Lisa Lombardi from HDG Hotels.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. You're recognized.
Thank you. So I can only speak for HDG Hotels and our 19 hotels that we have throughout the state of Florida. If this bill is intended to provide regulatory clarity for short-term rentals, it's not enough to protect the integrity of the industry that's expected to significantly fill our state's coffers, while also protecting our team members and our guest experiences the way that it currently is. But if the intent is one of accountability or really making sure that we're all accounted for, you know, this has a lot of potential to make sure that we can all recognize who is in our state providing lodging of any form. What we would love to see and are hopeful for and have been given some confidence would be added is a fine for non-compliance that and auditing requirements to this particular bill. That is something that we could really strongly get behind. And that way we know that those providing accommodations, again, are actually all accounted for. I would feel this way in any year, but this just isn't any year as we're all standing here masked up. Hotels are like so many in our state that are struggling at this point in time. We feel the pressure to keep our people employed, to positively impact our communities, and to get back to being in our proud position as your number one industry. And if we feel like we can truly account for all of those providing lodging of any form in our state of Florida, then we can all be certain that we're not leaving any revenue on the table and work toward whatever regulatory standards that we might want to put in place. So as it currently stands, there's room for improvement, but with those two things added, which again, we've been told and that we can feel confident that there's room for a fine for non-compliance and also auditing requirements, we could certainly be behind this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. One quick question from Ranking Member Escamon.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks for being here. And I appreciate the point about employment. I'm just curious, for your interaction as a hotel with DPPR today, do you get random inspections from DPPR? How does that work for the hotel industry compared to what the intention of the bill is?
So, So it's interesting. We, it was just recently received a letter from the department because there was question about minority employment at one of our hotels. So we have found there to be great partnership. And in that instance, some room for, if we can show you this and provide you this, can we show that we're in good standing with this particular issue? And that flexibility to really work with us, we've been able to assess. I also like to think, though, that we're one of those good actors, so our interactions tend to be positive in nature and nothing to be too terrified of. But again, I can only speak from our perspective as a developer and operator throughout Florida.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Jason Steele from the city of Satellite Beach in the town of Indalantic. And I believe, Mr. Steele, you're a former House member also.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jason Steele. I'm a former member of the House, and I'm delighted to be on this side of the fence right now instead of that side of the fence, because this is an issue that is very, very difficult. I also had the opportunity to work as director of the Division of Real Estate under Department of Business and Regulations and was the chairman of the Republican Party for a long period of time. The reason I tell you that is because I looked at every one of your records and your web pages, and specifically yours, Mr. Chairman, which was very impressive, by the way. I was ready to vote for you for United States Congress. And I looked
happier,
at...
Happier.
Yes, well, it's very interesting. But I also looked at every one of your other records, and it seems like the most conservative people on this committee are the Democrats at this particular point in time. So just like to share with you briefly some of the things that you've said while you were on your webpage. Almost every one of you went after and said they like local rule. Almost every one of you said no unfunded mandates. Almost every one of you said the least government is the best government. And almost every one of you talked about or got involved with your mayors, your city councilmen, your county commission. And you leaned on them to help you in your elections. And I'm telling you right now, 75% of the people in this state do not like this bill. This is not an invisible bill. This is one that they'll hang like an albatross around your neck if you vote for it. And I'm going to tell you right now, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and expect different results. Well, guess what? Here we are again with another bill, and I love Representative Fisher. Good luck in your Senate race. But it is hogwash, absolute hogwash, for him to say that this is a good bill and doesn't take control away from local governments. That is a joke. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is not an invisible issue. It's an issue that you need to be very, very careful about. It's political suicide for you. And I can tell you right now, I've got a little pill here right in front of me. It's called an invisible pill. And I suggest that if you're going to vote for this bill, that you go to www.politicalhypocrisy.com and find the subscription for it and take it before you go home. Because you're going to need to be invisible when you have to face that mayor, when you face that city councilman, when you face that county commissioner, and explain to them why you voted for this terrible, terrible bill. I'm going to tell you also that you're going to get a lot of mailers. I love Anthony Pedicini, one of my dear friends. But a guy like Anthony Pedicini will grab this thing, and you'll get the ugliest mailers you've ever seen. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're jeopardizing your your political career.
Please stick to the subject matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for that. It's an emotional issue.
I understand.
It's one. It's very important to everybody in this state, and I urge you to vote no on the bill.
Thank you for your testimony and your service. Up next, we have Tara Tagger from the League of Cities. You are recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tara Taggart, and I represent the Florida League of Cities. I want to start by thanking Representative Fisher for being accessible and hearing some of our concerns and suggestions on this bill. We are opposed to this bill today as it further preempts local governments from regulating short-term rentals, and it would undo ordinances adopted since 2014, ordinances that were adopted at the local level to solve problems with input from all stakeholders, realtors, property owners, neighbors, you name it. It's been said that this bill is about property rights, and they're right. My neighbor and I have the same amount of property rights, but when their actions begin to impede upon my property rights, that's where governments are supposed to step in. We shouldn't be picking winners and losers. We should be finding public policy that balances, the interests on both sides. It's also been said that government regulations are stifling growth in this market. Nationwide, listings on platforms have increased over 1,500% since 2011. We've brought up DBPR. They've proven to be overworked, understaffed, and incapable of handling new responsibility. But I do recognize it's one thing to stand up here and oppose this bill and point out problems, but it's another to offer some solutions. And here's a few ways I think we can make this bill better. We can separate homestead properties from investor-owned properties, recognizing that if I want to rent my home out on a game day weekend to make some extra bucks, that's vastly different than the out-of-state investor-owned property where they have no stake in the community and they're only looking out for the bottom line. We can allow for room sharing. So that little old lady that rents out her spare bedroom to supplement Social Security, she's allowed to do that. But that allows us to handle the bad actors differently. I also think there's this fear that if governments have authority, we're just gonna ban them outright in our cities. I think that's false. Florida is a tourism state and there is an economic benefit to having them. So let's say local governments, you can allow them as a conditional use in certain areas. Another option we can have is let's treat this like the medical marijuana law we passed in 2017 and say you can and allow local governments to maybe implement some regulations. But let's say those regulations are no more strict than the ones we have on bed and breakfast. I think this bill has a long way to go, as we've heard today. I think there's changes that can be had, but in its current form, we're opposed to the bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay. Up next, we have Peter O'Brien from Indian River County.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for your time. I'm Indian River County Vice Chairman Peter O'Brien. And as a late, great Yogi Berra once said, it's like deja vu all over again. And I'm sure you all are just as tired of us coming up here opposing this as we are of coming up here. So I would like to get to the point where we have some solutions. I would like to point out we had a meeting scheduled this morning with Representative Fisher. Due to a scheduling conflict, we couldn't meet. We did meet with his aide, and hopefully we'll meet with the bill sponsor later. But I have to respectfully disagree with two of his comments in his bill presentation. The first being that local governments can still regulate and control the party houses if we regulate everybody the same. The problem with vacation rentals is it's not the activity. It's the frequency and duration of it. I'll give you an example. I'm going to pick on Representative Overdorf here a little bit. Last Sunday was Super Bowl Sunday, and on a normal, non-COVID Super Bowl, Representative Overdorf throws a big Super Bowl party. He invites all the neighbors, invites a bunch of friends over. So there's a lot of cars parked on the lawn. There's cars parked on the road. He puts the TV outside, so it's pretty loud out there. Local government, we don't get any complaints about Representative Overdorf's Super Bowl party, because the neighbors are invited, and they know it's a one-time thing. It's a once-a-year event. Now, take that same crowd, the same cars, the same noise, and factor that day in, day out, week in, week out. That is the problem with vacation rentals. So, sure, we could say, okay, everybody, nobody's allowed to park on the street. So when you have a birthday party for your grandchild or your kids, and you invite friends over, and they park on the street, we're going to have to come give you a $100 parking ticket for parking on the street for your kid's birthday party if we treat everybody the same to get rid of the party houses. And I think everybody here would agree that's overreach of government to come here and give me a parking ticket just because I have some friends over for my kid's birthday. But that's the only way we could regulate vacation rentals if we do it everybody treated the same. So we have to regulate them separately and still allow you all to have friends over to your house and park on the street, because that's a one-off thing. We don't get complaints, and the neighborhood stays happy. We've talked about personal property rights. I would ask you to put yourself in this position. You're shopping for a new house, and on Wednesday afternoon, you pull up to a house, and you look at the next-door house, and there's cars out in the street, there's cars in the yard, and there's loud noise coming from the backyard. And you ask the realtor, well, what's going on over here? And your realtor's going to go, well, this is a vacation rental. And you're going to turn to that realtor and say, well, sorry, go show us something else. We don't want to buy a house next to this. So now, you know, it's kind of just like smoking. Nobody cares if you smoke. But when your secondhand smoke impacts people negatively, we regulate it. Same with a vacation rental. People have the right to use their property. I agree completely. But when their activity negatively impacts their neighbors, that's when we need to regulate them separately. So we do need to regulate them separately. The second thing I would take offense with was his comment that it's not working. 2015, in New York County, we put together a committee on short-term rentals. We had industry representation. The chairman actually owned several short-term vacation rentals. A realtor was on there. She had long-term and short-term rentals. Business owners that had rentals, people from the public, general people. And they met for 6 months, and they developed a series of recommendations to the Board of County Commissioners. Each recommendation was passed by that committee unanimously. The industry agreed, the public agreed, and we crafted an ordinance that we think is very workable. I know Miami-Dade did the same thing. They have a workable ordinance that with industry cooperation. I think we heard from someone from Jacksonville Beach. They have it. So if you go preempt us back to 2011, you're going to wipe out all of these communities where we have sat down with industry, we have done the right thing, and we have an ordinance that's working. It's an easy application. It's not onerous. Our fines follow the guidelines and state statute for code enforcement fines, so that they're not onerous. So we believe we do have a working ordinance. And so what I would suggest to the committee and the bill sponsor is, why don't we look at like what we did a few years back with the fertilizer ordinance, where the state adopted some guidelines. They were passed down, and the local governments could adopt those guidelines, you know, to see fit, so there was some consistency across the state. So I would recommend that we do the same thing here, that we be allowed to sit down with the bill sponsor and we get some industry folks together, we get some of the counties and cities together, and see if we can't craft a ordinance that can be used as a model throughout the state that still allows us to regulate the things we need to keep peace in the neighborhoods, parking, noise, occupancy, but make it so that anybody can go and apply and get their short-term rental vacation license, and that they sign up with the state and collect sales tax, and they sign up with the local clerk and collect the tourist tax. That becomes a win-win-win for all. And locally, we do the inspections. We go in as part of our application. We make sure that the state required fire safety things, extinguishers, smoke alarms, lighting, we make sure that's in place, and we have the people to do it. So I would urge us all to kind of take a look at this, and as a solution, see if we can't come up with a model ordinance that all the stakeholders can agree on, and then we go forward with that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate that. Is there anybody else in the audience that may have filled out an appearance card with this new COVID policy? We may have missed somebody, but if you filled out an appearance card, just let me know right now. Have you filled out an appearance card? What's your name, sir? Come on up and Okay, you wave in opposition, and who do you represent? Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Members, we are in debate. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Did you fill out an appearance card? I am, yes, sir. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to give you 30 seconds and you fill one out, but I need, you got 30 seconds and you didn't fill one out. I'm going to break the rules just for you. But you got to bring it in for a landing fast.
David Serdar from Lake County, Florida. Representative Haig, 33rd
Excuse
District.
Chair, can you please put your mask on, sir?
Yes, ma'am, whatever you say. I just came from the Senate. I'm a citizen, and it only makes sense. St. Augustine Beaches, I've been there. Recently, I've been to Indian River recently. I'm kind of a statesman. And citizens, you know, in Daytona Beach, there's a hotel that blocked the white for riding on the beaches. That's crazy. And okay. Citizens want you to do the right thing. People are from all over the world buying property here. But us citizens, now that we're citizens retired, we want some rights.
Thank you for your coming, sir. Members, we are in debate on the bill. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Members, we are in debate. Representative Daley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate, you know, Representative Fisher, you and I have talked about this issue for at least the last 2 years now, and I appreciate the work and the effort you put in. I think we just fundamentally don't agree. So I guess I'll start with the positive first. If you'd like, if it's worth it to you, if you'd like my vote, I'm supportive of the platform requirements you've put in the bill, and I do appreciate those. So if we take everything else out and just the platform requirements, I'm with you, and I'll even co-prime it. But other than that, I have grave concerns with this bill, starting first and foremost with home rule principles. This is an issue that everybody here knows has been going on for years and years, and I think my issue, one of the biggest issues that I have, is folks that came back. If you remember the way this went, at first the state came in and said, nope, we're going to preempt everything to the state. Then there was such backlash from the cities, the state came back and said, just kidding, we're going to allow you to do certain regulations at the local level. And folks, in good faith, created their ordinances, went through their public input process and everything else to put their ordinances on the books that they felt protected their local communities. And next thing you know, here we are trying to take that off the table and go back. And I think that's a little bit disingenuous from my perspective, because you've got a system that, while it's not perfect, I think it does work. You look at it, we talk about the affordable housing crisis. Heck, we just passed a bill that purports to help that affordable housing crisis, and yet here we are teeing up a bill that I think creates and vastly exacerbates an affordable housing crisis. If you can make $200 a night with a short-term rental, why the heck are you going to rent it out to somebody or have somebody purchase it for $1,500 to $2,000 a month? It just doesn't make sense. So you're taking available housing stock off the market. And I think some of my colleagues have brought up the issues with DBPR. DBPR is not able, it seems, to keep up with the workload that they have today. So let's go ahead and make it even more difficult. As a matter of fact, I'm a little surprised we didn't hear from anybody from DBPR this go around. I don't even think they've been in the hearing in previous years. And when I reached out last year, I was told, well, we'll handle it. Well, with all due respect to the agency, that's not an answer. This is a big issue in a lot of cities. And I think it really, the bill as it stands today, is a solution in search of a problem. Let me be very clear. I'm not anti-Airbnb. I'm not anti-short-term rental. I've used them. I will use them. I have no problem with them. But I think there is a definitive difference between Ms. Jones, who's the little 80-year-old woman who's renting out a spare bedroom to help pay her mortgage, or rents out the house for a weekend when she goes away to make some additional income. No problem. You won't get any argument from me any day of the week. But the problem is you have investor-owned properties that are just party houses. And I got to tell you, I come from a pretty quiet bedroom community, right? Where people, they buy their home, they're proud of their home, they raise their family. The husband and wife get up in the morning, or whoever, the spouses get up in the morning, they go to work early, they take the kids to school. They didn't sign up to live next to a party house that has parties, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, every single night of the week. So we talk about property rights. What about their property rights?
What about those folks? You want to have a short-term rental in a certain part of town? You want to designate this entire area by the beach, for example, as a short-term rental area? Fine. But you've got situations where you have these properties popping up left and right. I said it in jest when I talked to the League of Cities, but I said, why don't we take up a collection? Why don't we buy the house next to every legislator and do it as a short-term rental and see how quickly we fix this issue? Folks, this isn't a hard one. And I think if we want to talk about property rights, we need to be talking about everybody's property rights. Now, I got to tell you, in closing, I never thought that I would agree with Governor Ron DeSantis, but I do. I have to say I agree that this issue should be handled at the local level. So while I appreciate your effort, Representative Fisher, we're just not going to see eye to eye on this issue, and I'm going to vote down today. Thank you, sir.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to have to pretty much echo the same sentiments that Representative Daly stated. Just in a time where we are facing such nearly a $2 billion budget shortfall, right? And knowing that there's a potential of $1.4 million that passing this bill will have that type of impact on our budget, I just cannot vote for this bill. Also, just having been a single mom, right, for 13 years, not anymore, but just knowing just the lack of affordable housing options available right now, it's particularly within my community. Also, having had the issue with the Gold Rush Motel and knowing the huge epic failures that took place with DPBR, I'm going to have to vote this down. And then just also having had conversations with our city officials, Representative Fisher, and knowing that they are in opposition of this bill, I'm going to have to oppose it. So.
Thank you. Representative Mariano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to address some of the testimony we heard today. We heard testimony that we should vote against this bill in fear of facing our local elected officials. We're not elected by the county commission or chosen by our mayors to be here. We are chosen by the constituents of our districts to serve in this legislature. This bill is not about local control, home rule, etc. This bill is about private property rights for the residents of our great state. There are still provisions for local governments to have the ability to protect neighborhoods as a whole without placing certain property rights above one another. Thank you, Representative Fisher, for this great bill, and I urge you all to support it.
Thank you. Representative Gregory, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I think this bill has brought to my attention that we need more deregulation in this area, across the board in lodging and hotels, and I think that'll give us something to work on next year. Fully support the bill, and I just want to observe that the passion is appreciated by some of the debate and comments from in the audience, but I got to say the aggressive, sometimes offensive comments and threats aren't helpful, and former representatives should know better.
Thank you. Representative Greco, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're talking about property rights, and short-term rentals, it's a commercial operation. You're essentially turning a single-family home into a perpetual kind of mini hotel. And when you're talking about commercial operations, historically in residential neighborhoods in general, certain commercial operations are allowed. But if you look nationwide as to what type of commercial operations are allowed in residential neighborhoods, it's very limited. And it's limited to the type of commercial operation that would not have any noticeable negative impact to the neighborhood. If you want to have, say you're a psychiatrist or you're in the medical field and you want to have a home office, something along those lines, those are the things that are allowed in residential neighborhoods. Turning a house into a borderline unregulated mini hotel is something that obviously has a negative impact on neighborhoods. If we're going to talk about property rights, should I be able to buy a house and turn the garage into a CrossFit gym? Or can I just knock my house down and build a Walgreens? Like, where does the property rights argument stop? Does it just stop because Airbnb is lobbying hard? Or does it stop when the CrossFit gyms or the Walgreens, like, where is the line on what your property rights are between residential and commercial? So I really do. I think it's the property rights kind of deregulation argument. I just don't think it holds water. It never has. And as somebody who does represent the city of Miami Beach and represents the village of North Bay Village and parts of Miami, these are the areas that attract a lot of these party houses. And if you don't have local strict regulation of these houses, you know, they rent these things out for, you know, $10,000-$20,000 a weekend. You know, so a little nip here or there, I mean, it's the price of doing business. So this talk about liens and all this other stuff, they don't care. An LLC builds a spec house and they start renting it out. It's a big deal. And there's a social contract in residential neighborhoods. That social contract is that people are entitled to quiet enjoyment of their property. And saying that a local government has the ability to, you know, abate nuisances, you know, that's a reactive model. You know, the idea of having local regulation, Florida's a big state. Florida's one of the biggest states. You know, what's right for my district may not be right for a district that's more rural or a district that embraces short-term rentals. We have different rules than, say, where Chair Rommel is. I spent a lot of time in Naples this past summer, and, you know, I know what their rules are over there. The people in Naples probably won't be very happy if they lose their local control over their short-term rentals, because they have very specific rules in Collier County and in the city of Naples, as we do in Miami Beach. It's not a one-size-fits-all. I think the property rights kind of, you know, broad brush arguments just don't work. I do agree, and I think the governor will agree, that this is something that needs to be regulated locally. And, you know, I want to remind everybody that, and this is a completely separate issue, but Florida has the third highest rate of human trafficking in the United States. And if you want to do some research, pull out your computers, pull out your phones, and look up human trafficking rates among short-term rentals. Google what a trap house is. Okay, I work in the criminal defense world. I know.
Bring it in for a landing, please.
I will.
Thank you.
Chair, if I can please.
Couple more seconds.
This is an important issue. I didn't ask any questions. I'm reserving it for debate. And respectfully, there's nothing in this bill that does anything to address the proliferation of human trafficking in short-term rentals, which happens statewide and happens nationwide. And with that, I close. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great, thank you. Members, we do have one more bill, and we have 12 more minutes. Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Fisher, for continuing the conversation. I mean, this is the third year that I've seen this bill, and while I won't be in support this time, the bill has gotten better over the last couple years, but it's still fundamentally, there's two pieces that I just don't agree with. The preemption piece is a big problem for me. I just don't think that's the right solution. Frankly, I was involved with a lot of my local ordinances, and we struck a good balance on this issue, and preempting and those ordinances would just upset unnecessarily in my district. And I fundamentally just don't agree that the state would do a fair job in the licensing and inspection piece. So for those two fundamental pieces, I have to be against the bill. But certainly, I would love to work with you on a couple pieces we saw earlier from folks that testified on absolutely protecting homestead rights and the rights for someone to rent the room or the grandmother house, and certainly also punishing those bad actors. Because I know we do have some local governments out there that have these terrible ordinances that with exorbitant fines and parking issues. So I would like a more surgical approach than this approach, but I do appreciate your work on this bill, but I'll be down today.
Thank you. Representative Plakin, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As most of you know, property rights are one of the most sacred parts of our Constitution, right from the very founding. And without this bill or something like it, I don't know how to defend or how you can defend two property owners that own the same size house right next door to regulate one different than the other. Now, I get it. There's probably some cities, I know there's cities, that would just assume there's none of these. And we've seen that in some of the ordinances that in the staff analysis, you'll see a couple cities what amounts to an unconstitutional taking of the property by so much regulation. So we need to do something. And my friend, Mr. Steele, who I've known for many years, I do want to address his comments. He implied that this vote, yes, could get you thrown out of office. Well, I doubt it. And I'll never forget my first majority leader, Adam Hasner, had all the freshmen together. He said, you know, we're going to have some controversial votes come up, but none of these votes will get thrown out. Poor constituent services will. We have what's in effect a fiduciary responsibility to vote what we think is the right policy, regardless of political threats. And I know there's good people of good faith on either side of this. That being said, I'm voting yes today, but I have some reservations about the way the bill is structured. So my vote may or may not be the same when it goes to Commerce, which I'm privileged to serve. Thank you.
Representative Harding, you're recognized for a quick comment.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll make it really brief. I'll second the concerns of Representative Gregory and Plakin on the former member, but we'll leave that alone. But I think one of the things that we heard was the discussion of emails coming from out of state to speak in support. And I don't know about you all, but just for the record, we've received hundreds of emails in opposition that I can't track to the state of Florida, to my district at all. So I think that the record needs to show that that goes both ways. So Representative Fisher, I look forward to working with you on this bill. I think there's some important concerns that we need to address, but I'll be up on the bill today. And thank you for all the time that you've given me on this bill.
Represent Escamante for one more little bite of the apple.
For sure. Thank you so much, Chair, for the time, and thank you to the sponsor as well. I'm not going to be repetitive because I think my colleagues really did tackle a lot of the points that I also share. The fact that so many local governments have embraced this disruptor and have found ways with all stakeholders at the table to allow for the growth of advertising platforms, I think is indicative of how effective this issue is pursued at a local level. So the home rule component, local control component, absolutely has my support, and I think there isn't a problem to solve in that regard. The problem that I do have overwhelmingly is with affordable housing. I will send the sponsor at least one study that I have that talks about the economic price of unregulated local issues on platforms like Airbnb. But we have seen outside investors purchase apartments at large scale and rent them out as vacation experiences, removing supply from some of our most fragile cities when it comes to affordable housing. In Orlando, we have seen this with new apartments being built in the city. They can't find tenants for the rates they want to charge, and so they instead turn to Airbnb to put folks into those apartments that are not citizens. And we have an affordable housing crisis in Orlando and are continuing to grapple with ways to address those issues. And I am concerned that this overarching expansion with little ability by DPPR to currently regulate it under their staffing constraints would cause more harm than good. And so for that reason and others, I'm going to be down the bill today.
Great. And I'm just going to make a quick comment. But before that, members, we've asked for permission to extend for 15 minutes so we can get the final bill in. It's been granted. And therefore, Representative Rodriguez moves that we extend it to 2:45. And without objection, we show that motion adopted. Representative Fisher, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I know most minds have already been made up. And members, no matter which way you vote, Republican, Democrat, yes or no, I hope nobody ever, whether it's this bill or any other bill, votes up or down on a bill because of a political threat. It should be based on pure policy. And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, if somebody threatens you in any way, please come see me and I will help back you up. But thank you. And with that, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be brief. I know you were able to get an extension, but I want to be respectful of your time and also my colleagues that are coming. So all I would say there is that along this process, I've met with anybody that wants to meet. There was a scheduling conflict that didn't get communicated properly. And you know we'll address that. But I've met with folks along the way. This bill has been improved over time because of the feedback of different individuals. The last thing that I would say is, as I've closed out, I've been in the legislature now. This will be my fifth year. I've never seen another former member come and threaten a member of the legislature politically, or sitting members of the legislature politically, or you know invoke the name of political consultants that the people sitting on the committee are using. And so, you know, I think it's a really unfortunate situation. I agree with Chair Rommel's comments. If anybody, you know, tries to threaten you or do anything and I can be helpful to you, I certainly will. That's just totally out of line. What I would ask you to do is look at the bill and the merits. Look at it based on your values. And if those line up and you want to support the bill, I'd really love to have your support. If it doesn't, let's talk about it and figure out a way to get you to yes. Did I ask for your support? Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fisher, having closed on the bill, Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly?
No.
Escobani?
No.
Gio Lombardo?
Yes.
Golf Marcel?
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano? Nixon?
No.
Umfroy?
No.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plankin?
Yes.
Robinson?
No.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Toledo? Chair Rommel?
Yes. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 219 Vacation Rentals as amended reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, last bill, and we're going to have to boogie here a little bit. HB 73 Malt Beverage Advertising Agreements by Representative Tomko. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I know it's a long day, so I appreciate you hearing my bill. House Bill 73, Cooperative Advertising, allows theme parks and beer manufacturers of all sizes to enter into cooperative advertising agreements in the state of Florida. The bill provides a narrow exemption to cooperative advertising that is undertaken pursuant to an agreement between a manufacturer and a theme park. That this agreement is negotiated at an arm's length for fair market value does not directly or indirectly involve the sale or distribution of alcoholic beverages, is reported to the division within 10 days of execution. This bill enables competitive economic activity currently prohibited by a statute that at least, in this case, prohibits free market activity. This bill does not affect the integrity, operation, or purpose of the three-tiered system. And for timing purposes, Chair, that'll be it.
Turn my microphone on. Members, are there questions of Representative Tomko on the bill? Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Tomko, we spoke a little bit about this. One of the questions I had was, can you tell me, I mean, how many other states, I know this is a national law as well, so how many other states have adopted a provision like this?
Thank you for that question. So currently, we have California that allows for this to happen. It's not exactly the same exemption, but one very similar, as well as Wisconsin, which is the home to the Miller Beer Company, allows for the same exemption as well.
Okay, and just one follow-up, sir. The other question I had was, let's say that you put a lot of provisions in here for somebody that may be a bad actor and not allowing for other members to participate in this. And if I recall from years past, the fines were pretty exorbitant, like $25,000 or something like that. What is your level this year for fines and for things that if somebody does not adhere to what your bill says?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently in this bill, there are no fines or penalties. However, we have an extent amount of conditions that must be met. I know previously we had spoke to the concern this bill, in line 38 through 34, goes even further to state that they cannot keep an entity out, which I know was a concern of yours in the beginning. However, I have not, other than yesterday, talked to stakeholders on the opposing side of this legislation and would entertain any further discussion of how we can make it comfortable for everyone as we move forward.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, this is a bill I've seen twice, and this time I voted for it yes twice. But it's a little bit different, so I want to kind of dive into those differences. And actually, Rep. Overdorf mentioned, I think, one of the primary differences. There was a penalty section at the end of the bill that I remember voting on twice. I think you answered the question yes, but I just want to reconfirm. Would you be willing to entertain adding that section back in and certainly working with stakeholders to make sure they can be comfortable if they're willing to work with you?
Uh,
Mr. Chair,
sorry. No, you're fine. Thank you for that question. And yes, I have asked that the stakeholders on the opposing side come to me, and so we can do just that and work out language that might be favorable and more of on the lines of what we saw the first time. But yes, I would be willing to entertain that, and I know I've committed with you that we have those conversations further as well.
Mr. Chair, one more question. Follow up. Mr. Chair, can I?
Yeah, you're recognized.
Thank you. And another issue that came to my attention that we spoke about, my distributor, for instance, actually I've talked to a couple of them, are concerned that if this bill goes through, there's only so many marketing dollars that are available from the wholesaler that would go maybe directly more to the theme park. So these other distributors would be cut out. Is that two-part question? Is that the intent of your bill? And secondly, is that something that you'd be willing to work on to see if we can refine that to make sure that those folks are comfortable that those important marketing dollars can flow back into their local communities?
Recognize.
Thank you for that question, and that is not my intent of the bill. However, my intent of the bill is for those free market approaches to allow these companies to enter into an agreement with each other. These agreements may not even be of cash value. For example, if there is an Irish pub at a theme park, having a Guinness bar tap at that pub would fall under what we are trying to do in this legislation. So right now that is against the law and they cannot do so. So some of these agreements that would go forward may not be of cash value. And I know we had previously spoke about this issue, but it could be as far as tastings at the park, allowing for a craft brewer to come in and give tastings of their product to showcase it on a platform that they may not have been able to do so in the beginning.
Thank you. Representative Daly, you're recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Tom Coe. Just out of curiosity, and I appreciate the time that you spent with me on this bill, and would you be open to, because I know there have been other versions of this bill in the past, both by you and other folks in years past, would you be open to reintroducing some of the limitations or adding limitations on, let's say, frequency or the duration or anything along those lines to put in additional safeguards back into this bill?
Recognize.
I would definitely be willing to sit down with you and have further discussions of how we can make this more favorable to both sides. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more.
Yeah, one more, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And just out of curiosity, when is the last time an exception such as the one you're proposing was passed by the legislature?
That is a great question. The early 2000s, so around 21 years ago. So the argument that you were hearing that if we open this up today, we will see in the next session that everyone will fall under this exemption, and that is not the case. It has taken almost as long as I have been alive for something like this to come back in front of the state legislature. And for that to happen, it would have to come back for you guys to vote on as well. So clearly, NASCAR does have that exemption and got it back in the early 2000s. However, it's not exactly the same exemption, but it was an exemption based on advertising within this realm.
Thank you. We're going to public testimony right now. And we're going to need to limit public testimony about 30 seconds to maybe a minute. Brewster Beavis, AIF, you are recognized. AIF is waving in support. Kelly Millett from Coastal Beverage and Reese Holdings. You're recognized. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kelly Millett, Ronald L. Book, PA, representing Gold Coast Beverage and Florida Distributing Company. Felt compelled to come up here today. Our companies are a member of the Florida Beer Wholesalers Association. I think many of you know Mitch Rubin, who unfortunately, because of his condition, can't be there here today. So my client is disproportionately impacted by this legislation because we're the distributor that located in Central Florida that largely services these parks. I wanted to just tell you that I think listening to the sponsor, that I really believe that the principles on which this bill is based are flawed for a couple of reasons. It is really about big business. It allows the biggest companies to enter into the biggest marketing agreements to help the biggest companies market together. Okay, the companies that we're talking about here, the proponents, Universal, and some of these manufacturers, already have unlimited budgets with which to do that. They don't need this to further promote their brand nationally or globally. They already can do that. It's the smaller guys that can't do that.
Ms. Millett, I'm sorry, I got to bring it in for a landing.
I will. And just, I guess, second and final, Mr. Chairman, to bring it in, is that I think that they want you to believe that these agreements are just a little exception. It's a big exception. In this case, allowing the biggest manufacturers to compensate the biggest retailers at the expense of small and medium businesses. And for that, we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Samantha Padgett from Florida Restaurant Lodging Association. Please, a really fast minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Samantha Padgett. I'm the General Counsel for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. The great thing about this bill is it doesn't require anybody to do anything. It simply opens up the marketplace and allows two entities to enter into a mutually beneficial marketing relationship. It doesn't impede the three-tier system. All it does is encourage competitive economic activity in our state. And at a time when our tourism industry is hurting, any of these relationships that can be entered into in arm's length, where both parties are not influencing one another but agreeing with one another in contract, to promote tourism events in the state of Florida that could potentially attract people to our industry, our tourism industry in the state of Florida, I think the benefit is there not only for these industries but also for our state as a whole, and we ask for your support on this good bill.
Thank you for your support. David Sutter, you have a quick minute, sir. Welcome back.
It's David Sirdar. My Uncle Paul was the Illinois Racehorse Chairman, and he'd be saluted in Northern India. He was a mink rancher, breeder, and my wife worked at the Playboy Club, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. I'm from Illinois, the land of leak, and a house divided against itself cannot stand. But I'll let you know, I don't drink. Drinking and drugging, that's the problem within society right now. And I believe we are the tourist state. I love Florida. Land of flowers. I'm a florist. I'm from Libertyville, Illinois, where my wife owned flower shops, first woman in the state of Illinois to be inducted into Rotary. But I don't drink anymore. But we got to promote the people that do soundly and don't mess up. You know, this bud's for you. There's a lot of advertisement. But the little guy, I got a friend of mine that does his own hops. I know people that have the small markets. You are the leaders. You know what you're doing. But I mean, I am part of an association where we get people's lives back in order. I go into lockups and help out. And that's what life's all about. Drinking and drugging, hey.
Appreciate your testimony and your service to the state. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Members, we are in debate on the bill. Member, debate.
Nice to meet you.
Seeing no debate, Representative Daly and then Robinson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. Representative Tomko, I appreciate the time you spent with me, and I know we're going to be spending more time together. I want you to know I this is not a perfect bill by any stretch. I have given it a lot of thought. It is probably the bill that I have been lobbied on most in my short legislative career, but I've put a lot of thought and effort into it and talked to both sides and everything, and I appreciate your willingness to have the conversation to add in additional safeguards because I don't think it's a perfect bill. I would like to see limitations on the scope, the frequency, the duration, and other safeguards and other limitations to make sure we're protecting the distributors and that nobody's getting an uneven hand here. But I do think that also if entities want to enter into a private contract, they should be permitted to do so just like any other entity can do with theme parks today. So I'm going to support it today, but Representative, I hope that we can come to some agreement on some additional language because I'll see it again in Commerce, and I will not be supportive if we can't do so. So thank you very much for your time.
Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sake of brevity, I'll echo Representative Daly's comments. And I voted on this bill in the affirmative twice, and with the assurances that you've given me about it moving forward, especially that penalty aspect, I'll be voting again affirmatively.
Representative Overdorf.
Thank you, Representative. I've also had discussions with you. I've had discussions with several of my distributor friends and working with them, and the only reason I'll be voting affirmative is because your diligence to go ahead and work with them and to hopefully come to a solution, and I know that you will do that, and I look forward to hearing about the discussions associated with that. Thank you.
Seeing no more debate, Representative Escamani is recognized for a little debate.
Thanks so much, Chair. And I just want to thank the bill sponsor for taking the time to talk to me about the bill, too. And it's funny, I slightly differ with my colleague. I will be voting no today, but mainly because I would like to see it be more open to smaller businesses. I mean, the fact that it's just theme parks, I think, yields the notion of big agreements. I mean, if it was open to small recreational activities, then I would feel more compelled to believe that smaller breweries can actually be a part of that agreement. Because I could see a smaller zoo, for example, working with a local brewery. And I would be and I need to do more research on this, I would be interested to see if in California and even at the stadiums today, are small breweries a part of that, or is it just the big breweries? I think that could also be, to your point of a free market, something I would be very interested to look more into, and my vote could change, but that's kind of where I'm sitting right now. But I thank you for all your work.
Representative Tompkins, now you are recognized to close.
Thank you, and I'll be brief, but just want to address some certain points that were made in regards to the penalties. I had just gotten a chance to look back at my notes, and there are current penalties in place. What you had voted on the first time was an increase in those penalties. However, if there was any violation in the bill, it would be the same fines that any other manufacturer, distributor, or vendor would be receiving. To the point of this affecting small businesses, the fact that Samantha got up here and spoke as someone who represents a lot of small businesses in the state of Florida, and also having conversation with the small guys. And I quote, the small guys have been in support of this before and stand strong with the free market principles laid out before us. This bill is not eliminating small guys from getting involved. This bill is helping them showcase their product and giving them a platform to do so. The fact that they could go into these theme parks where people from all over the world come to visit and they could do tastings and they could show people their product. We are a state that is proud to promote fresh from Florida products. My family being in agriculture, I know how important that is. And so me being a small business owner as well, I would never, ever do anything to hinder small businesses from being a part of these conversations. I appreciate all the questions and the thoughtful debate, and I would ask for your favorable support as we move forward.
Great. Representative Tomko, having closed on our bill, Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly?
Yes.
Escamani?
No.
Gia Lombardo?
Yes.
Gulf Marcil?
No.
Gregory?
No.
Grieco?
No.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
No.
Umfroy?
No.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plankin?
No.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Toledo?
No.
Chair Rommel?
Yes. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 73 reported favorably. Congratulations and great work on that. Representative Escamani moves, we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Congratulations.